Garrett Temple, you are the first Raptor to join us on back-to-back programs. I know, obviously, last one was Friday, but welcome back, Garrett. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, my guy. Appreciate y'all having me, man.
Yeah. Last time we interviewed you, obviously, it was before the OKC game that you guys played on Friday, and we asked you, you know, are you going to play tonight? And you gave us the quote that Darko tells people before the game, let you know if you're going to be in the rotation. So did he let you know that you were in a rotation for later that day when you played against OKC?
The OKC game, it was actually interesting. I wasn't in the rotation.
And, okay.
And then it was one of those situations where coach looked down the bench. I think they went on a little run. And he looked and he stood kind of next to me. And then he looked down. And I think Scotty was next to me. He said, yeah, put Garrett in. And then coach was like, yeah, G, come on.
Okay.
And put me in.
Okay, so Friday.
Was a situation where he changed up that first half rotation.
This is great. Friday, you told us Scotty's coming along in that leadership role off the court and stuff, and now he's coaching. Like, we saw Kyle Lowry the other day.
Coach Barnes put you in,
yeah,
huh?
Kyle Lowry, like Nick Nurse tried to put campaign in, and Kyle Lowry waved him back to the bench. Like, go sit down. We got Scotty doing the rotations and stuff now as well. So, Garrett, you played a lot of minutes. Like, you played, what, 29 minutes across those two games on a back-to-back. I know that you're still a professional athlete and you keep yourself in peak condition, but that's, you know, significantly more minutes than you've played most of the season. How'd you feel coming out of that back-to-back?
I didn't feel bad. Calf is a little tight, things of that nature, but in general, I felt good during the games. We haven't had as many players to be able to play what we call conditioning games or play groups. So the guys that haven't been in the rotation playing games, you know, kind of 5-on-5 scrimmages on game days. We haven't been able to do that for like the last 2-3 weeks. So, I've just been getting some sprints in, whether it be on the treadmill, just continuing to lift. And body felt pretty good afterwards.
Yeah, Garrett, I got to let you know. First off, after the game, I always do a post-game review, and I hand out 3 stars for the game. You got my 3rd star for that one. That's totally unbiased, too, because – you came in, me and Blake were watching
it
together.
It was a little biased I were watching in the press box together.
We were hyped when you got in the game. We were like, oh, there's our boy Garrett. What's he going to do? And then one of the first possessions, you got on a Shea, like right away after coming in. And we're like, oh, no, this might be a problem. Except it's a problem for Shea because you actually ripped Shea. And you got that steal there for one of your 2 steals. And you knocked down your 2 threes as well. And the whole time, we were just in the booth just like really enjoying the fact that like, yo, like you
plus
came on 10 the program.
And plus 10 and a 20-point loss for the show's correspondent. Right. Yeah, that's
Coach Barnes should have played you more.
Individual plus minus is not the be all and end all, but you got to feel pretty good about, you know, the steals that Will mentioned, knocking down your couple threes. But yeah, you guys won the minutes that you were on the floor.
Yeah, no question. At the end of the day, you want the team to play well when you're out there, whatever that may be, whether you're part of that or whether you're just out there and, you know, the other 4 guys are just doing great and you're not messing up. So individual plus minus, you know, you want the team to do well at the end of the day, especially a guy like myself who's very, you know, team-oriented, unselfish. It's not about scoring. It's not about me doing anything spectacular. I just want the team to play well and to flow, the game to flow well when you're in the game. So that was positive.
Yeah. Well, the next game against Washington the night after. We figured you'd be in a rotation for that one. I just didn't think that they would use you basically as center. we got a small ball 5 on the pod. Tell us about that. I mean,
man,
yeah.
That was my first time, I guess, officially being the 5. Probably since like maybe elementary school.
Wow.
Maybe like 1st grade, 2nd grade. but, you know, I know all the players from the 5 spot. And in today's game, you know, in a lot of offenses, the 5 is really the person that's setting the table. You know how we have KO, you know, making a lot of passes from the top of the key. Him and Jonathan Mace have made some great assists, you know, over the last few games, as well as Yach when he was playing. So it's not as if I'm, you know, posting up and trying to get a bucket on the block, you know. So we're just trying to change things up and I made a pick and pop 3, which is great. But we're trying to figure out, figure out how to play with what we have. And I think I was, zero plus minus. It was even when I was in the game. I let Marvin Bagley get an easy dunk on me. But other than that, I think we did pretty well.
Man, you hit a pick and pop three. It strikes me that, like you said, you're not going to run, through the post. You're not going to run the offense through you in the post. But, we need a pick and pop version of the too small chirp, right? Like, if you had posted up Marvin Bagley and got one, you could give him the too small, even though he's big. We need a pick and pop version of that. I don't know what it would be, though.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be. I have no idea. I'm not, God didn't give me the creative gene. So I have to ask one of my young players to figure out what that chirp would be.
Well, I mean, there was Scotty had one earlier in the year. Who was it? Drummond, where he mocked his his upright running position after a bucket. That wasn't on a pick and pop, but some version of too slow, I guess, instead of too small.
True.
So Garrett, you just mentioned, I brought up the plus minus first, and you just mentioned it again for the second game. And again, it's not the, there's a lot of context in there, but I have been curious, when you come back after a game and you individually or you guys as a team, what kind of numbers do come up in conversation? What do you look at in the box score? Whether in the box score or something, one of the assistants is tracking, what kind of numbers things is Darko bringing up, at a halftime or after a game and things like that? I know before it was a stat available on NBA.com, coaches would talk about, I got someone tracking deflections during the game and things like that. What are you guys looking at after game numbers wise?
Yeah, so we definitely look at deflections. During the game, halftime, they have, we have a number up there on the board. A lot of things that we look at is transition points. We look at turnovers, points off of turnovers. Before we got in, before we were so, decimated by injuries, we were looking at, offensive rebounds. It's a little, a little less telling. I rebounded by almost 20 last game in Washington, but they only had a couple of more, maybe three more shots than us. I think the big things right now are just transition points, how many we're giving up and how many we're scoring, and turnovers with obviously a whole new team. And Darko said it the other day, because he wants to be a team that, he wants to be the coach of a team that passes the ball a lot. We're going to have turnover. We're never going to have a game where we have zero or one turnover. So he's okay with that, but we can't have 25 or 20. Right. It has to be more like 10, 12. And when we do that, it's going to be in our DNA to pass. We're going to get a lot of assists and obviously less turnovers.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been great to see you back in the rotation. It's been great to see you contribute. The team overall, though, 10 straight losses, and you have another chance to sort of crack that tonight against the Nets. But how do you, I don't know, how are you guys handling the fact that you guys are on this losing streak and the situation is pretty difficult with obviously lots of players being out? It's not that the team is so, down bad. It's just it's a difficult situation. How are you guys dealing with the fact that you guys are on a 10-game losing streak?
I've been on a few double-digit losing streaks before on different teams, and this I can say is the best vibe. I don't know if it's because we have a lot of injuries, we have guys out, so I guess the expectation isn't as high as other teams maybe. At the end of the day, there's no excuse. We're paid to play basketball and play at a high level, and we go out there to try to win games. Nobody's out here trying to lose. And as competitors, at the end of the day, intrinsically, we want to win. Mm-hmm. That's part of what makes these live sporting events what they are. Everybody is trying to win. And as competitors, it's tough, mm-hmm. Especially losing a game like in D.C., losing a game like OKC when you're there. You have one of the team that's top three in the league and wins losses, and you're not able to get it done. And then in D.C., a team that's below you in the standings, and you have a chance to win it in a close game and not able to get it done. So it's difficult, but that's the thing about this league. You have another one a couple of days later, if not the next day. And you just got to get back to the drawing board and and try to figure it out.
So you said something within there that I think is helpful for fans to remember, is that the players are trying to win. No player is going out there trying to lose. And obviously, I don't know how much you're on, I don't know how much you're on Twitter, but I'm sure you understand the, you know, that certain fan bases or certain parts of the fan base are, you know, tanking this, tanking that. It's better to lose, whatever. And, you know, I'll put out an injury report and people reply tanking. It's like, okay, well, Scotty didn't like dislocate his finger because of tanking. He dislocated his finger because he dislocated his finger. What is that like on the player side? Like, how aware of that are you guys? How difficult is it to, you know, navigate that you guys are trying to win every game, but there's an understanding that, yeah, the organization probably doesn't care all that much about, you know, or in some teams in some cases might actually prefer to slide down the standings. What's that like for you guys?
Honestly, it's one of the most contradictory things in our sport. And it's a hell of a balance for the NBA in general, in my opinion. And for the specific team, you know, I haven't heard one time from our coach or our front office that we're trying to lose. I've been on teams where it was specific things that were happening where it was very obvious that we were trying to lose, you know, guys being very healthy and just not playing. Where in this situation, obviously, injuries have happened. Like you said, Yag didn't dislocate his finger or his ligament. Yeah, Sky didn't break his hand on purpose. The things that have happened in people's personal lives obviously didn't happen on purpose. So it's honestly, most guys, it's pretty easy just to focus because we've been taught to win and try to win at all costs. So it's not as if we're towing the line. I think the most difficult part is if a team is trying to kind of slide down those standings, it's probably more difficult on the coaches than it is the players. Because we're just out here trying to play and play as hard as we can and compete and try to win. Whereas the coaches may have to, you know, play certain guys, certain minutes and things of that nature. And as a player, you're looking at a coach and saying, what's up? We're trying to win games or what? So, again, in this situation, we're in a situation where nobody has shown me or obviously told me that we're not trying to win games. So, we just are in a tough spot in terms of how things have shaken out.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the previous spots where, you know, you've had instances where healthy players are rested. And again, you know, tanking is a reality of the league, even if it's not explicitly said. How do you get buy-in back in those places once you make that decision? You know what I mean?
It's difficult, man. It's difficult.
Because you can't just flip a switch of like, we're deciding to lose. Exactly. And now we have standards that we need to win.
Exactly. That's a great question. And I'm of the opinion of, you know, you can't just give players, young players, you know, minutes just because I've always been of the opinion people have to earn their minutes, you know, and what Darko had Grady do, you know, Grady didn't just come in and just get minutes right away. You go to the G League, prove that you can play at a high level. You show growth and then you get a chance. And if you take advantage of your chance, you get more. Whereas some teams and some organizations, we're just going to play the young guys no matter what. And if we lose, then that's even better because we'll get a better draft pick. I don't like that. And most of the teams, the couple of teams that I've been on that had that mindset, they didn't get any buy-in from the players specifically. Mm. And honestly, that front office is not there anymore. So, it's difficult to get buy-in back. I think from the players or the coaches, honestly, because at the end of the day, we're all competitors and we want to win games. And the fans, at the end of the day, they want to see a product of people playing hard and winning. And if things shake out to where you don't win games, okay, you may have a chance to get a great player, but at the end of the day, especially for our fans, you want to put a product on the floor that people are proud to say that that's my team, no matter win or loss.
So obviously, you know, a part of that is also, hey, Jamias Ramsey's going to start this game and it's the last game on his 10-day. Like, obviously that guy wants to win and wants to do everything. I know I asked you a little bit about the 10-day guys, the G League call-up guys today. So I apologize for doing this again. But I did talk to Jamias on Friday. He spoke really highly about being able to pick your brain a little bit during his 20 days with the Raptors. You know, the Raptors decided not to continue on with him, at least for now. Kobe Simmons is up with you guys for the next 10 days now. Did you have a conversation with Ramsey when that decision came down? Have you gotten a chance to talk to Kobe yet now that he's with you guys?
I haven't had a chance to talk to JR. I'm definitely going to reach out to him. And no need to apologize. Again, I love my story. I love how I got here. I talk about this all the time, just to have people have a mindset of a 10-day guy, because a lot of times we're, as NBA players, we're too entitled, and we're not as grateful as we should be for the position that we're in. But I did talk to Kobe today during shoot around, and you know, I told him how I joked with him about his high school mixtape, because when I saw him coming out of high school, I was like, this guy is going to be cold. His change of pace, his ability to, you know, shoot, score, handle the ball. But yeah, I'm definitely going to continue to be in his ear. He's our point guard for the second unit right now, so he's going to have a lot of people in his ear. So I'm just going to let him soak it all in, and then, you know, give my tidbits and let him know I'm an ear if he needs me. And I've been in the same situation he's in multiple times, as we talked about last podcast.
Yeah, that's a top 20 recruit at a high school.
I got to check out the high school mixtape. I wasn't familiar with this high school game.
He was cold, man. It was his change of pace. He was real smooth, quick. He was like Ja back, like in high school. Like, okay. That's the type of game he had. Yeah.
I'm definitely seeing this mixtape. Okay, well, speaking of someone's mixtape that I've seen quite a number of times, it's time to ask about another one of your former teammates, Vince Carter. So, obviously, everyone in Toronto knows what Vince did, especially in his prime. You got to be teammates with Vince in Sacramento, and I understand that you guys golf, and you guys are, you know, you got a lot of friends around the league, but it's got to be cool being friends with Vince. What was it like being his teammate, especially at that time in his career where he had pivoted to, you know, being more of like a rotation guy, veteran voice, but at the same time, you knew what he was back in the day. And I'm sure lots of players saw Vince and was like, yo, that's Vince, even though he's like the man. Yeah.
No, I've told people this, whoever would listen, Vince Carter, there are two people that are the most down to earth superstars I've ever met in my entire life. Vince Carter and Penny Hardaway. And Vince being his teammate, man, just such a open book. Whatever you wanted to know, he's willing to tell you. We played a bunch of golf together, obviously. We played against each other when he was in Memphis. And obviously before, you know, when he was, I don't know where he was at, maybe I might have been in the league when he was in Dallas. I might have been in the league when he was in Dallas. But for sure, a lot. We played against each other, matched up against each other in Memphis. And I just picked his brain about, you know, his regimen and all of that stuff. And obviously, we connected, like I said, on golf. We went to Hawaii. I went with him with his fam to Hawaii, and we played in the summertime. We still stay connected today. He's playing golf almost every day now, which I'm jealous of. But it was just amazing to see his how humble he is. Signs every autograph. Just a very nice guy. And I obviously talked to him about his time in Toronto and how crazy it was.
Right.
How the fans are amazing and how it must have been amazing while he was there. But it was great. And it's like you said, you know, when he got the Hall of Fame, you know, pick, me, him, George Hill, and Justin Jackson have a group chat.
Okay.
So we always hit each other up. We play together in SAC, and we really tight to this day. We all hit him up and told him, you know, congratulations, old man. But it's crazy for me to say he's one of my, you know, best friends I've had.
Wow.
As a teammate. And then, you know, from then on, great guy.
I'm happy you guys did talk about Toronto a little bit, because I always wondered with Vince, like, is this still a bit of a sensitive subject? You know what I mean? Because it's like, obviously, he took Toronto to like the very, very high heights, like arguably like the biggest heights that Toronto's ever been in before the championship. But I know it kind of ended in a way that wasn't pretty, and I know that there was like a lot of a lot of returns to Toronto where he got booed quite heavily and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure there's like some fault to go around either side. I wasn't really there for it, but I guess, is it a sensitive subject for him to talk about Toronto?
Not with me. It wasn't a sensitive subject. Okay. It wasn't a sensitive subject. You know, people brought it up and he talked about it, guys on the team. And a lot of guys didn't even really know, you know, that it was kind of a non-amicable breakup. It's interesting. I saw on Twitter the other day, his first two times back in Toronto when he was with New Jersey.
And that was vicious, man.
He was cooking. Yeah. He was cooking.
Oh, he was cooking.
Hit a game winner.
Yeah.
Those were vicious, and then his game was vicious. He doesn't seem to have any ill intent at all towards the city, and talks about it very highly. So
that's nice.
Toronto, y'all should be probably welcome Vince back with open arms.
I mean, I think he's gonna be like the first Raptor or his first player to go in the Hall of Fame as a Raptor. And I know it's not like baseball where you like literally put a hat on or something and like you're
on your bust at the Hall of Fame. They're like there's like the little likeness of you and they put the logo on your.
But
on
still, that would be like the first player where it's like, oh, that's a Raptor.
Yeah.
Going to the Hall of Fame. With all due respect to like Hakeem or whatever. People forget Hakeem was problem with the Raptors.
Like, Vince for sure put Toronto on the map for basketball. That was, You think about Vince Carter, you think about the Toronto Raptors for sure.
So you are what, 37? Vince is, you know, a decade older than you. You've got Justin Jackson in this group chat. By the way, we got to get him another 10-day. I know his 10-day just wrapped with the Wolves a couple weeks ago. Get him back to the league, killing in the G League. But so you have kind of these couple generations. And when you played with Vince, you were, you know, a vet, but still, you know, not the level of vet that Vince is. And there were these young guys coming up. And I guess I'm curious, you know, when you look at kind of the multi-generation like that, and I know Justin Jackson went to UNC, so maybe it's a little extra for him and he's not the best example, but how much or where is the line did you find that like players are like, oh my God, that's Vince Carter. Like I'm playing with Vince Carter. Vince Carter's calling my game. Is that still there with guys who are in the league today or is that kind of, you know, is that generation more like mine and your generation of like, oh my God, that's Vince Carter?
I think it's more mine and your generation, honestly, which is crazy because Justin has to be about at least 27 now, I would imagine. I don't think he's more than, he might be 26. But it's interesting. Like, I don't know if Grady would be in awe of Vince as much as, you know, I think about what
you
got to
put him on,
said,
man.
When he, I think about what Brandon Miller said when he talked about Paul George being his GOAT, and I'm like,
what?
PG, like, not to take anything away from PG's game. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But just in terms of the age, I'm like, wow, PG, you know? Not KD, you know what I'm saying? Paul George. So with that being said, it's probably anybody 26 or older, 27 and under, I should say 27 and under.
Yeah.
26 and under. They won't understand the impact that Vince Carter had on the game.
That should be Darko's next film session, man. Just show him the Vince Carter like 20-minute highlight clips.
Grady's gonna be watching like Jason Capono clips instead of how do I get open for this long two.
He surpassed Jason already, man.
This long two.
Yo, that's so funny. You ever look back on your? I mean, I'm sure you got in a little bit of this, but like. That whole era where everybody was just coming off a screen and then taking a mid-range jumper like that Rip Hamilton. Like the amount of points you guys left on the table, man.
We talked about with me and James, our coach, Coco.
Yeah.
We talked about the mid-range twos and how – and the Rip Hamiltons. And when I first got to D.C., I wasn't a great three-point shooter when I got to Washington. Sam Cassell was my coach.
Yeah.
Lived in the mid-range.
Yeah.
Come down on pull-up mid-ranges and, you know, fast break. And he was like, gee, instead of shooting a three, just when they swing it, step in. Mm-hmm. No dribble, just step in and take a midi. And I used to do that.
Yeah.
And nowadays, somebody would look at, I'm just thinking.
Yo, they'll bet you for doing that.
Seen as, like, what the? They call it travel or something. Something would happen. The world would blow up if somebody, a guard shot a spot up two-pointer. That would be so interesting to see.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, Twitter would go crazy.
I feel like a lot of people left a lot of points on the board.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And now it's like obviously the mid-range being dead is exaggerated, but now it's like it's superstar territory, right? If the defense is taking away the paint and getting up on you to take away your three, then right. The mid-range becomes really valuable. Like KD can shoot that. Brandon Ingram shoots it a ton. Kawhi shoots it a bunch. But
Kyrie.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Garrett, that's a good question because you never see the Raptors really take the mid-range. I'm sure Darko probably doesn't want you guys to.
One of the lowest rates in the league.
Yeah. Who's got the best mid-range game on the Raptors?
Oh, no, that's a great question.
Because we don't get to see it.
Pregame when you're all doing your shooting stuff.
Oh, who got the best one?
The best mid-range is Gary Trent.
Jr. Gary Trent. Okay. All right.
G Trent. Yeah.
Yeah. He does take them sometimes. Yeah.
He takes them. And they're tough, but he makes them. So. It's one of those guys like, okay, knock it down, G.
I feel like
that's one of those good make. Make. Get back on defense.
I feel like with Gary, that mid-range jumper is easier for him than the transition layup, man. I swear this guy. He has a couple 3-on-1s that I'm like, hey, should be a layup.
Hey, but we watched in the film today.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
I think the one that he missed, maybe it may have been a little personal. Him and Benny would kind of jaw him before he got the one and he bumped him and missed it. But he had a nice finish.
He did.
I think a couple of possessions after that. So he's good on that one.
That's a random beef, man. Well, what were they beefing over, man? What were they talking? Do you ever get in the game and you just trash talk just for fun?
Nah, G is not a guy to trash talk to.
Okay.
Trash talk. Oh, trash talks, something, but he doesn't back down.
Right.
But certain guys rub you the wrong way.
Yeah.
Denny obvious, you know. Maybe one of those guys.
Interesting. So, all right.
Yeah.
We got. You know what? That's for next week. I'm going to ask you a list of guys that rub players the wrong way, you know?
Hey, I mean, Dennis is back tonight. And we asked Dennis a bunch of times on this show about, like, he's one of the kings of that. Like, he gets into it with everyone. I'm curious. Do you think it'll be a little spicy with Dennis tonight?
I expected it to be more spicy last game.
Okay.
I definitely feel like he's going to test Javon. I think Javon's starting for us tonight.
Okay.
I think he's going to test him tonight, but we'll see. It might be a little more spicy. You know, he didn't have a great game. He wasn't able to like get started at all. So we just got to keep him at bay. But because if he starts scoring and hitting some threes and getting to the rack, it's going to be a long night in terms of trash talk. For
Us, can't let FIBA Dennis get going. We've seen that too.
Exactly.
Garrett, when you hit that three on Dennis, I need you to hit the freeze on him one time, okay? Just tonight, please. My one request.
I got it.
All right, Garrett, I appreciate you spending time with us again, man. Thank you.
Thanks, y'all. Appreciate it, fellas.